So here we are, continuing our series from last week that I've called From Transition to Transformation. And it's based on the book by Robert Brummett called Finding Yourself in Transition. The new book has a different cover, so if you go to the bookstore to find it, it doesn't quite look like this. This is an old cover. But the subtitle is Using Life's Changes for Spiritual Awakening. And Robert's a Unity minister. He's also on the faculty of Unity Institute at Unity Village, which is outside of Kansas City, Missouri. And it's a great book for anyone in a transition period or if you want to just understand what transitions are in case you ever find yourself in one. But we're in one all the time. So, I mean, whether you like it or not, you're in it all the time. So it might be a handy-dandy little guidebook to keep on hand. But today's topic is called The Void. And I found a few little bumper stickers that I thought would be perfect for today's theme. See if you can relate to any of these. This would be really funny if it weren't happening to me. The face is familiar, but I can't quite remember my name. It's been lovely. But I have to scream now. I like that one. But I haven't lost my mind. It's backed up on disk somewhere. How many roads must a man travel down before he admits he is lost? I mean, can you relate to any of these? You know, maybe you are lost. You know, maybe you're in a fog. Maybe you don't know who you are anymore. American poet T.S. Eliot wrote a wonderful poem. He says, in order to arrive there, to get from where you are not, you must go by a way wherein there is no ecstasy. In order to arrive at what you do not know, you must go by a way which is the way of ignorance. In order to possess what you do not possess, you must go the way of dispossession. In order to arrive at what you are not, you must go through the way in which you are not. And what you do not know is the only thing you know. And what you own is what you do not own. And where you are is where you are not. Today we're talking about the void. Have you ever been there? Have you ever felt like this, that you don't know where you are? You know, you don't know what you own. You don't know anything. You know, it's that place that you must experience, as T.S. Eliot says, in order to arrive at what you do not know. And so it's a place of confusion where you wander, not knowing where you are, where you're going, which end is up, you know, where you're going to end up. I mean, sound familiar? Ever been there? Maybe, thank you, John. And maybe some of you are there now. So in this series, we're going to be taking a look at how the process of change invites us and awakens us to spiritual awakening. Because, as I said, whether you know it or not, whether you like it or not, you are in the process of transition every moment of the day. Old cells are releasing so that new cells in your body can become alive. You know, old thoughts, thank goodness, are releasing so new thoughts can come in. It's the cycle of life. It's all a part of the cycle of life. You know, and we're always in that process of letting go and opening up. We can see it in nature, can't you? I mean, old leaves fall off the trees in the fall so that new leaves can sprout out in the spring. You know, we're always constantly pruning our trees and bushes and plants so that there can be new sprouting of new growth, making it stronger and bigger. There's a natural letting go process going on all around us. So why do we ignore that or don't accept it for some reason? There are seasons of the soul, just as there are seasons of nature. Now, last week, I talked about the first stage of a transition. And it's the first stage is endings. That's where we begin. It's the ending. And the endings can be planned. You know, you can choose to leave a job. You can choose to leave a relationship. Or the endings can be unplanned, like you get laid off of a job. You know, a loved one suddenly dies. With endings, we are preoccupied with what once was but is no more. And once we get to the point where we can accept the ending, where the past is no longer our primary focus, then we can begin to shift into the next stage of a transition, which is called the void. The void. This is where we're, you know, wandering as if we're lost in a desert or endlessly adrift on a, you know, adrift on an endless sea. You know, that those moments where we, you know, almost feel like we're drowning and we're not quite sure which end is up. It can also bring, when you're in this stage, it can be, bring up feelings of anger and fear. You know, we lash out at the people around us. We lash out at the very institutions that are bringing about the change. You know, and feelings of confusion can come up and resentment and remorse and eventually grief. Yes, grief, because you're dying to your old self. You're dying to the way things used to be. You're dying to how you used to do things. Yeah, things aren't the same. Robert Brumman, in his book, Finding Yourself in Transition, writes, "The void touches our deepest fears of helplessness, of abandonment, of death. Indeed, most of us would do anything to avoid these feelings." Right? We don't like it. We don't like being there, as if feeling as if we're drowning. And as I said, just as the seasons of as nature has its seasons, there are seasons of the soul. And I think the writer of Ecclesiastes really knew this well when he wrote, "For everything there is a season, and a time for every matter under heaven, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, and a time to pluck up what is planted. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh." And so as every winter follows spring, you know, every sorrow there is joy. Every heartbreak there is a new beginning. You know, every death is followed by rebirth. And yes, every void is followed by a new beginning. But we, you know, culturally, we human beings, we Americans, we just would do just about anything to avoid the void. You know, we want to fill that emptiness with something. You know, we understand and see that growth is an additive process, but we don't really see that growth is also a process of letting go. Robert writes, "Letting go is a vital part of any creative process. You've got to let go. You've got to be open without any preconception of what's going to happen for that creativity to flow." He goes on to say that the earth was, in the biblical creation story, the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the earth. Creation begins with emptiness. From the emptiness emerges new life. And so it's from this place in the void that when you're feeling lonely, when you're feeling empty, that you have a wonderful opportunity to have a, you know, to see yourself and to see your life in a whole new perspective. It's a great place to be. Khalil Gibran in The Prophet said, "And could you keep your heart in wonder at the daily miracles of your life, your pain would not seem less wondrous than your joy." And he goes on to say, "And you would accept the seasons of your heart, even as you have always accepted the seasons that pass over your fields." And I love that, the seasons of the heart. Robert relates his own experience of the void. He was walking through the woods on a winter day when, and it was at Unity Village, and he was walking through the woods and he saw how barren and stark it was, that woods. And he noticed something. He writes, "There was a quiet sadness a sense of emptiness. And yet I was struck by the unique beauty of the winter forest and by the fact that I now could see much farther through the forest and more clearly than I could amidst the summer's lushness. I then realized in this winter of my life, this time of emptiness, I had the opportunity to see more clearly that which was hidden from my former view. In the emptiness, we are given to see that which is not visible to the eyes veiled with familiar surroundings. Native Americans have initiations. Tribal peoples have ceremonies that mark rites of passage. And even our own great spiritual teachers, they all had those times of trials and temptations. You know, Buddha, Muhammad, Moses, Jesus. You know, they all face those demons within themselves. And so that they could connect with their higher source, their higher self. And every single one of them came out of the void with new power so that they could begin a new phase of their life. They had to let go of everything that they thought they knew. Lao Tzu, who was the author of the Tao Te Ching, he writes, "In the pursuit of learning, every day something is acquired. We get and get and get. But in the pursuit of the Tao, which is that ultimate reality, that oneness with God, in pursuit of the Tao, every day something is dropped." So we got to surrender, got to let go, got to drop that which is no longer part of our ongoing good. The void is not a place to avoid. The void is a good place. It's a place filled with incredible creative energy. It's also a place where you have direct access to God and providing guidance and providing that faith that we know what the next step is to take. Last week we started talking about the Exodus story and looking at this Exodus story from the Old Testament as a wonderful classic example of a transition. And talking about endings last week, we saw where at first to the Hebrew people, to the people of Israel, when they went to Egypt and it was a good thing. In their home country, there was a famine and they saw that in Egypt there was lots of food. So they left and went down to Egypt and it saved their lives. But once they were in Egypt, later on, it became not so good. Because their new ruler came up into power and he put all of the Israelites into slavery, which made their lives miserable. So it was good at the beginning, which saved their lives, ended up to be not so good towards the end. It imprisoned them. And so in the midst of that imprisonment, there was this Moses, this wonderful leader that rose up and led the people out of Egyptian bondage, crossed the Red Sea. It's a classic example of an ending, ending an old way of life. And so now we have the Israelites, the children of Israel, safe and sound. They're across the Red Sea. They're celebrating the fact that they survived Pharaoh and his gang. But after the celebration ended, they have to face the harsh reality of their current situation. They're now in the desert. They have no food, no water. They have no idea where they're going. And they're absolutely defenseless against any harsh force that they would encounter. Feels like the void, sounds like the void to me, doesn't it? And I bet there was a lot of grumbling and moaning going on as well. Moses was the only one who had any desert training. And he got the training because he had already had his own personal wilderness experience. But Moses also had another very valuable resource, that direct access to God. And that, from time to time, proved to be the only thing that saved them. And so how does this story relate to us? Because that's how we look at the Bible, metaphysically. Not the literal words, but how is this story playing out in our lives? You know, just think about a time when you were in the wilderness, wandering around. You were in that place of the void. You know, you were probably feeling lost and vulnerable, just like the children of Israel as well. But know that you have within yourself your own internal Moses, and that internal Moses can rise up at any moment and lead you out of that bondage. And that is the presence of God within you. You have direct access to that divine presence within. And it will lead you every step of the way. It will be with you all the time. And it's the only thing that can save you. Now, how long does it take to move through the void? And you might not want to hear this. It will take as long as it takes. The number 40, you see, repeated in the Bible, it's a symbolic number. It's the number for, just means a time of completion. So the Israelites wandered in the desert for 40 years. Jesus was tempted in the wilderness before his ministry for 40 days. All 40 means is it takes as long as it takes. Because what you've got to know is that a whole generation of bad consciousness has to die in order for a whole new generation of new consciousness to be born. And that takes as long as it takes. And you might ask, so what do I do in the meantime? if you find yourself in a place in the void, Robert Brummett has some wonderful suggestions that help you through this process. The first thing is, don't resist. Embrace each experience. You know, Robert writes, the only and fastest way out of the void is through it. So experience each feeling fully. Don't get lost in it. Embrace it, but then let it go. Learn from every experience. So embrace every experience and learn from it. Second thing is, this is huge, avoid making any major decisions or long-term commitments. Everything's changing. The person who made the decision may not be the same person who has to live with it, because you're going to be changing in the process. So don't make any long-term or major decisions. The third is, don't try to push the river. Don't try to rush it. Don't try to force the process. Accept each day as it comes. And don't go back to the old way of life. It won't work anyway. Okay? It won't work even if you try. So don't push the river. Fourth, and I think this is one of the most important, is pray, meditate, and trust God. Make sure you spend regular time in prayer every day. Pray and meditate and trust in your own inner wisdom, even when everything feels hopeless. Trust God and spend time in prayer and meditation. Fifth one is, take care of yourself physically. Make sure that you eat well, that you're exercising. Get plenty of rest. Make sure you're sleeping. You know, and treat yourself. Go to the spa. Get a massage. Take a bubble bath. You know, be good to yourself. Sixth is, develop a support system or a prayer partner, either a prayer group or a prayer partner. You know, get somebody who will help support you through this transition, whether it's a group of people or one other person, and make sure you feel very, very safe expressing your feelings, sharing your feelings with them. But this is really important. Have at least one other person, and it may not be a close friend or relative. It may be someone you don't know well. You know, but find a prayer partner. The seventh one is, create some type of ritual to symbolize your passage from the old life to the new life. And this is important. I mean, because I said, you know, tribal people had rites of passage, and Native Americans have initiations. We've kind of lost that. And so it helps to have some kind of a ritual to, it could be art, music, poetry, dance, a ceremony of some sort. Marianne Williamson has a fabulous book called Illuminata, and it's full of all different kinds of ceremonies that you can do privately or with friends or in groups. There's a divorce ceremony that I've used with people. I mean, it's wonderful to have a ceremony to say, okay, this was then, this is now, and moving you through that that process. But the void is a passageway bringing you into being fully alive and fully awake. And the void can be a very rich place if you just embrace it and you don't push it away. It'll take as long as it takes, but know that God is with you every step of the way. I want to end with this story, and I love this story. Sometimes I feel my life is a series of trapeze swings. You ever felt like that? I'm either hanging on to a trapeze bar swinging alone, or for a few moments in my life, I'm hurtling across space in between trapeze bars. Most of the time, I spend my life hanging on for dear life to my trapeze bar of the moment. It carries me along at a certain steady rate of swing, and I have the feeling that I'm in control of my life. I know most of the right questions and even some of the right answers. But once in a while, as I'm merrily or not so merrily swinging along, I look out ahead of me and in the distance, what do I see? I see another trapeze bar coming towards me with my name on it. It's empty, and I know in that place in me that knows that this new trapeze bar is my next step, my growth, my aliveness coming to get me. In my heart of hearts, I know that for me to grow, I must release my grip on the present well-known bar to move to the new one. And each time it happens, I pray that I won't have to grab the new one. But in my place of knowing, I know I must totally release my grasp on the old bar. And for some moment in time, I must hurtle through space before I can grab on to the new bar. Each time I'm filled with terror. It doesn't matter that in all the previous hurdles across the void of unknowing, I have always, always made it. Each time I'm afraid I'll miss it, that I will be crushed on the unseen rocks in the bottomless chasm between the bars. But I do it anyway. Perhaps this is the essence of what the mystics call the faith experience. No guarantees, no net, no insurance policy. But you do it anyway. Because somehow, to keep hanging on to that old bar is no longer on the list of options. So for an eternity that can last a microsecond or a thousand lifetimes, I soar across the dark void of the past is gone and the future's not here yet. It's called transition. I have come to believe this is the only real place that real change occurs. Yes, with all the pain and fear and feelings of being out of control that can, but not necessarily, accompany transitions, they are still the most alive, most growth-filled, passionate, expansive moments in our lives. Hurtling through the void, we just may learn how to fly. So join me next week as we celebrate new beginnings. God bless you.